man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Who Shotcha. I'm your host, Ify Wanyuwa, and today we're joined by film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good with you?
Icebox cakes, Ify.
Who?
Icebox cakes. It's summertime. You don't want to turn that oven on, mm-hmm. but okay. You still want cake.
Yeah.
Icebox cakes. There is a great Christina Tosi recipe that is literally almost entirely just Ritz crackers, grape jelly, and whipped topping.
Ooh, okay.
And it's great. And then my husband just made one that was all these British, like, tea biscuits, supposedly the Queen's favorite. These things, like, if you eat them on by themselves, it is a cookie that is almost a cracker. Okay. Like, it is so barely sweet. But if you stack them up and surround them with chocolate ganache, you got an icebox cake.
Oh, yeah. See, the cookie you described reminds me of those Ovaltine cookies.
Yes.
That just is like just enough when you're a kid with a parent who doesn't want to give you anything sweet. It'll give you what you need. But for some reason, my dad always brought those back from Nigeria and was like, here. And it's like, no, like leave them there. We have real cookies in America. And we are also joined by producer and film festival programmer, Drea Clark. Drea. What's good?
Well, it's been pointed out to me, first of all, that we never come. I'm actually, you guys, I don't know if you knew, I'm here permanently now.
Yay!
Huzzah!
I just sort of like made a copy of the keys and for the last basically 2 months have wedged my way in. And now people think I work here. And so I'm just going to keep running with that. So it's a delight. Very exciting.
Mazel tov.
I'm happy to be here with you gentlemen. As I said, you make me feel like a delicate flower.
Yay!
Amongst these strapping men. So, but what's funny, my what's good, also a recipe, a summer recipe. It's pretty detailed. You start with grapes. You can get red or white, but they have to be seedless. You wash the grapes. And then you put them in the freezer.
Yes.
And my recipe is called frozen grapes.
Yeah.
It's my favorite summer treat.
Yeah.
They have a crunch that's better than an ice cube because there's like a slight texture to it, a little sweetness. When it's super hot and you have crappy air conditioning that only gets one room in your apartment, not naming names, but I'll tell you which room of mine it is. The frozen grape, that's your way around it.
Ooh, okay.
I'm loving some frozen grapes.
Something I learned about originally from Kelly Clarkson.
So oh, my God.
I knew they'd be great.
She's practically a Clark.
Yeah. Plus, we've got writer-director Ben Meckler, whose credits include TBS's Final Space, the Cartoon Network's Clarence, and now a Netflix show. What's good, Ben?
I love and now a Netflix
show. I know.
It's called Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beasts, 2020. It's good, though. I don't know. I was going to say I just had an old friend in town, but now I feel like it should be a food thing.
Yeah, recipe.
You should, yeah.
I went vegetarian like a year and a half ago, so I've been really missing barbecue for a while, which is like one of my favorite things. And I just got this cookbook called Mississippi Vegan.
Mm.
Holy shit. Am I allowed to curse?
Yeah.
Oh, please do.
Holy shit.
I like that you said it with more emphasis.
With gusto. I felt free. It's so good. I made like a blueberry barbecue sauce, tempeh. I don't even like tempeh, with collard greens and, man, what else was in it? I don't know. It was really good and it scratched an itch, and I was really psyched about it. So Mississippi Vegan, great cookbook, apparently also a blog, which I just found out like yesterday.
Oh, man, so you didn't even have to pay for it.
No, I really screwed up. I really screwed the pooch, yeah.
That's what you get.
Yeah. Otherwise, good.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's good?
I mean, you know, staying in task. I got to give a shout out to Rebel Ice Cream. I'm a keto boy. Where are my keto nation keto dogs at? You know, hanging.
I don't know what keto means.
I'm over here eating a biscuit. I have no idea what we're.
Yeah, keto is a high fat, low carb diet. The thing that makes it better than any other diet is that high fat part because that means lots of cheese. You know, you can have wine as long as it's dry, and you pretty much can have any alcohol just straight up. Or with a Zevia. Rebel Creamery is the only delicious keto ice cream I had because essentially the sugar is the problem, but ice cream, everything else is pretty keto because it's just like heavy cream.
Right.
And, you know, they dice the pecans and it tastes like regular ass ice cream, but we still don't have the science yet where we can pull the ice cream out the freezer and eat it. I don't know. Let's get on that, scientists.
Are you allowed to have fruit?
Berries.
Oh, okay.
What's the heart disease risk on the keto diet?
I mean, when you're lifting like weights like me, non-existent.
Hell yeah.
For everyone
else,
heart
replaced.
Very high.
High. Yeah. Extremely high. I did it in college, and then I never came back to it, but I did enjoy it.
I'm now at the age where, like, all my pains, I'm like, okay, this is it. They're like, I had a muscle pain around my chest, but I just assumed it was my heart.
Stop
right.
It.
And I was like, oh, damn, okay, I'm going to get that heart attack. It's coming. I mean, look, I've lived, if you are like a meathead like me, you've done some stuff where you're like, my heart needs to come back. But if Randy Savage got to, once I get to his age is when I'll start
and
being
worried. And he ate nothing but Slim Jims.
Mm-hmm. He let him just slide down his throat like a cartoon hoagie. It was easy. Yeah.
All right. So we got a super, super hot show today because we're going to be revisiting the psychological thriller Eyes Wide Shut, which was my first time watching it, which if I knew that you'd see Nicole Kidman looking good as much as you do in this movie, I would have saw it sooner, which is considered to be the first Christmas orgy movie directed by Stanley Kubrick.
I like that.
Also his last.
I'm still waiting on the sequel. I don't know.
It's the film's 20th anniversary. And also, after seeing this, I'm like, why does everyone do the hack Die Hard joke? Now it's Eyes Wide Shut. What's your favorite
Call
Christmas?
Alonzo invented that.
Really? Yeah. All right. Well, I'm taking it from him. Plus, listener Sarah from New York has a fantastic question for the Who Shot line that you definitely don't want to miss. And as always, we'll have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our news roundup game called IDIC, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? And here's how it works. We're going to read a news headline, and any one of us will jump in with our take by answering these two questions. Is this important, and do I care? And I'm going to just let you know, even before I read the headline, I don't give a fuck about this. I'm so tired of it. I'm so tired of this. San Diego's Comic-Con 2009 kicked off on Thursday today, yet it was clear even before the world's largest Comic-Con convention had started that one set of fans was most excited to see DC Universe's Justice League, which came out in 2017. That's right, fans are clamoring to see the 2017 flop that put Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, Lois Lane, The Flash, and Aquaman all on the same screen. But they don't want to see that clunky two-hour version that was released in theaters. They want to see the three-and-a-half-hour version. And to show how badly they won, they launched their own ad campaign in the form of billboards and bus stop signs in and around Comic-Con featuring the hashtag release the Snyder Cut. And the billboard refers to the film's original director, Zack Snyder, whose vision of the film was never realized after he had to drop out from the project because he had a death in his family and was replaced by Joss Whedon. And the goal is to pressure the Warner Brothers to release Zack Snyder version, which Snyder said exists. What is going on? Like, that's...
honestly, I have the exact same take on this as I do for Trump's tax returns, which is, sure, release it. You keep saying you're a millionaire or a billionaire and have nothing to hide and it's going to be amazing. And, you know, it didn't really matter all this time. So then let the people decide. And I feel the same way about the Zack Snyder version. Sure. Fine.
Yeah, honestly,
see it? I'm sure it's terrible.
I do like that Twitter currently has hashtag release the Snyder Cut and also hashtag fuck the Snyder Cut. Yeah. So that is a
Twitter.
Thing that's happening. And I'm sure
by
the time Comic-Con is over, you'll be seeing more of it. My favorite take on all of this, my good friend Mark Hoyk posted a really funny meme where it's that one where the brain gets larger and larger and does more stuff. So the small version is release Zack Snyder's cut of Justice League. And then the next version is release Ken Russell's uncensored cut of The Devils. Because these are all Warner Brothers movies. The next one is release James Bridges' flashback cut of Mike's Murder. And the last one is release Bill Gunn's Stop. And if you have to Google all of those, please do. You'll be fascinated.
Let me, Bridges, you will have to Google most of those, but it'll be worth it for you.
I mean, yeah, I think just go ahead and drop it. But honestly, I feel like Warner Brothers is in the position of like, no, we're not going to be bullied by some nerds. I'm sorry, you're not going to see it.
I think they're just well aware that there's the amount of money it would cost to actually like finish and release it is not going to be worth the amount of money of the the like hundreds of people that are going to spend money to watch it.
You mean the invading hordes?
Yeah.
And, you know, and they clearly like are realizing the Snyder chapter of DC movies is over and is not something they want to revisit. Like they've, you know, you look at a movie like Shazam or Aquaman or Wonder Woman, it's like, these are the movies people want to see. These are the movies that have nothing to do with Dawn of Justice and, you know, his half of Justice League and all that stuff. So yeah, that's not a Pandora's box they feel like reopening anytime soon.
But yeah, is this important? No. Do I care? Hell no. that's my answer for that.
And speaking of things that probably the people complaining about a lack of Snyder Cut are also complaining about.
that Venn diagram is a circle.
Pretty much. One big egg. There's big news in the Bond franchise. News broke this week that actress Lashana Lynch will take on the role of Agent 007 when the current 007, played by Daniel Craig, retires. This will make Lynch the first woman ever to inhabit the role, unless we count the 1967 Casino Royale, but, you know. and also the first black woman. There, you are correct. Although she'll take on the 007 moniker, her character's name in the upcoming film is Nomi, not James Bond. Lynch is a British actress best known for playing Maria Rambeau in Captain Marvel and Rosaline Capulet on the ABC show Still Star-Crossed. The film is currently shooting in Jamaica and Italy. It'll be the 25th film in the Bond franchise with Cary Fukunaga directing. Is this important? Do you care?
I think it's important and I care because I think having Lashana Lynch come in this capacity is such a smart, it's this technicality, right? Like she's playing 007, she's not playing James Bond. So it's sort of a cake and eat it too scenario that the broccolis and they're like, cuddling of this franchise and James Bond is a white man and however far they're going to take that, that they can still story-wise put forth that there is a black woman who's equally talented. And they've actually had Naomi Harris?
Yes, as Moneypenny.
As Moneypenny, and she had some great action scenes in some of the earlier films. But I particularly like the potential for expansion in this. We haven't seen any of the other 00s since, like, GoldenEye. So the idea of... that's right. He's not you know, James Bond has become this big thing for us. But even within fictional MI6, he's one of, 13 agents or something. So I think it's a smart way to start diminishing the import of the James Bond on its own.
Yeah, I know they kill off another 00 in Octopussy. That one I remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, eight. I think it was eight.
Everything Drea said is why this is still listed as this could be important. I could care from this. You know, just being a black fan of many nerdy, huge cult properties, I'm still jaded, and I believe that this movie can start off with a cold open of her getting blown up, and then them calling Daniel Craig being like, yeah, they killed the last 007, we need you, bro.
Entirely possible.
Yeah.
Well, so,
I mean, on that subject, I'm a little bummed because I'm fairly certain this is like a spoiler in the movie. This was not something that was like officially released in a press release. This something. Yeah, no, this is something that was reported as a rumor and then like pseudo confirmed by enough people who'd heard it from sources, right? It was kind of how this news had gotten out there. And there were a few things from this movie in the past few weeks. I don't want to spoil other things, but there are a few other people that are coming back or appearing in the movie that were spoiled. Which is kind of a bummer because I feel like, boy, that would have been a really exciting moment.
Right? It's the
theater,
it's the shower
the
scene of Psycho, and you're like, wait, we just lost our
and I could be totally wrong. Like maybe it's something they would have given away like in the beginning of the trailer where they're like,
it.
Whoa,
that's
what
a
movie
great
is this
twist.
That Lashana Lynch is in? Yeah. She's 007, but
it does.
This
I'm
is
sure.
Why I hate all entertainment news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson, you guys. I don't know if you've heard about her making good press choices once again. this week, she set off a ton of internet memes in sitting down with the artist David Saal as part of a collaboration for As If magazine, everyone's favorite magazine.
Oh, yeah.
From a quote from Clueless.
I thought it was Wayne's World.
As If.
As If.
It's probably both. And he was talking about her thoughts on acting trends. And in their back and forth, she said, you know, as an actor, I should be allowed to play any person or any tree or any animal because that is my job and the requirements of my job. And that went really well. Nobody had a problem with that.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely nobody mocked it. One of the reasons that this has even come up in conjunction with her is because she was attached for a while to play a trans gangster in a film called Rub and Tug, based on a real life person who was... did not look anything like Ms. Scarlett Johansson's.
And the Ghost in the Shell thing, of course.
And also, yeah. She's a non-Japanese actress.
Oh, she got the haircut.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Is this important? Do you care?
I mean, Scarlett Johansson is my problematic bae. She's definitely the girlfriend I'm inviting to my family's Nigerian wedding who's going to show up in dreads.
Stop it! She's going to wear a dashiki.
Yeah, she's going to come through. She's going to have an Africa pendant around
Stop
her neck.
It.
You know, she's going to like wear a little bronzer, but try think no one's going to catch on to that. This is her, but you know, I still love her. You know, we'll have a firm talk.
Hollywood's Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah.
I just love that she did that classic move of being like, no, let me clarify, and then said pretty much the exact same thing.
Yeah. And throughout the term political correctness, I was like, come on.
That she was railing against the political correctness. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I was saying there has to be an entire very well-paid team of publicists who are all bald now from pulling their hair out of like, please just say no comment.
Also, another favorite of mine is like any person, any animal, any tree. Like that reminds me. I remember one time.
That's like saying I don't care if you're black or white or purple.
Oh, that's where I was going. I remember when I was in middle school. There's this guy who thought I was following him, and his response was like, look, man, I ain't scared of you because you're black. You could be green for all I care. And I was like, that would be very weird, and you should be
afraid if I was green.
Also, I never said anything to you. This is a weird interaction immediately.
Yeah.
I do like all of the memes that this, like, there was this great tweet about this. Someone put this picture of this gorgeous tree up, and they're like, I am terrified. I've been staring at this all day, and I don't know if it's Scarlett Johansson or not. My favorite comment that I saw online was someone said, I'm finally understanding why she's marrying Colin Jost.
Yes. I like that one, too. But somebody else said, like, the same people who were flipping out about the fact that we were going to get a black 007 were also like, yeah, why shouldn't Scarlett Johansson be able to vote?
It's wild. But no, it's not important, and I do not care. Yeah, so we're going to skedaddle for a bit and let you listen to these messages from other shows on the MaximumFun.org network. But when we get back, we will be talking about Eyes Wide Shut, and it's about to get horny. Hello, Internet. I'm your husband host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife host, Teresa McElroy.
And together we present Schmanners.
It's extraordinary etiquette.
For ordinary occasions.
We explain the historical significance of everyday etiquette topics, then answer your questions relating to modern life.
So join us weekly on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
No RSVP required.
Check out Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway, and joining me in the studio today are...
Drea Clark.
Ben Meckler.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Hey, y'all, Christmas has come early, and it's almost it's like we're doing a Christmas in July thing.
Yeah.
But
so many levels.
It was almost 20 years ago to the day that Stanley Kubrick's final film was posthumously released. Kubrick passed away on March 7th, 1999, and Eyes Wide Shut hit theaters July 16th, 1999. And that's pretty much all I'm allowed to say right now because it's a Christmas movie and everyone knows that there's only one true authority on Christmas movies. It's Christmas Daddy. Alonzo Duraldi.
Yes!
I'll take it. This is the point of the show where we have the plot synopsis and I have to share the one that's on iTunes because it cracked me up. Partially because they managed to incorporate the title. So everybody buckle up.
Thank God.
Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman star as a married couple entangled in an intricate web of jealousy and sexual obsession in Stanley Kubrick's final cinematic offering. At a Christmas party hosted by wealthy, unconventional Victor Ziegler, Sidney Pollack, provocative advances and innocent flirtations arouse suspicion as high society physician Dr. William Harford, Cruise, and his sexy wife Alice, Kidman, watch each other from a distance. Alone later, the seemingly perfect couple confront their intimate sexual fantasies. which don't include each other. Caught between reality and illusion, jealousy and obsession, William struggles with his inner urges. Will he act on his erotic fantasies or keep them hidden deep inside? Sometimes a man can see more clearly with his eyes wide shut. Whoever wrote that at Apple, they do not pay you enough.
I'm sorry, Stanley Kubrick's final cinematic offering?
Yes.
What in the fuck?
You know, there was an altar, and he walked up with the print of the film.
My brain had shorted out at that point, and then when I checked back in, there were lustful advances. Yeah.
Oh, man. Good God. Before we even get started, I have so many thoughts, I think first, in the general sense of the film, I can only imagine how angry they were when they got the cut. Knowing he was dead was like,
he dies like 6 days after handing this cut.
He delivered his final cut, which he offered his final offering, which I don't think he ever had a final offering of any of his movies from everything I've ever heard about him.
I was going to say, even if they'd had notes, Kubrick was not really a notes guy. Yeah, so he's like, here's my movie, take it or leave it.
The other thing is, I didn't expect to be as mad at this movie as I thought I would.
Well, this is your first time seeing it, right?
Yes, my first time seeing it, and I guess we'll say sexually progressive, and the character Bill is so toxic.
Yeah.
The idea of someone, and then I went, because when I get real into something and tweaky, I was like, all right, I'll look at the Wikipedia to see if it came from something, and so I learned about the novel it was kind of based off of.
I believe it's a novella.
That's what Wikipedia said, but I was like, whatever person wrote this in is being pretentious, and I hate you. But
Ben wrote it.
What a fucking idiot. Shit.
Offering.
But what they were saying is in the novella, it's more equal. They both kind of say each other's fantasy. And the movie that I saw was a guy who got jealous at the idea that his wife would be interested in another man, mm-hmm. and wanted to go fuck somebody out of anger. And there's not emotional equity there. Polyamorous relationships are nothing to run away from. It just takes a lot of openness, communication.
But I think
you're right. Yeah.
For me, because I saw this when it came out, so it was sort of a collegiate viewing.
Ooh.
Not to brag, but I went to college. Go Badgers. And I don't remember having much of a takeaway.
Yeah.
So what impressed me watching it this time was that a film could bore me this extensively.
Oh my God.
Also eliciting such eye rolls, such consistent. That's craftsmanship.
I am aghast at this, where this conversation is going. Really?
I do
I'm
want
with
to
you.
Hear
yeah. y'all hate this movie this much.
I do not hate this movie.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. I hate the characters.
Which is okay. You're
and the movie
to.
Hates him too. Yeah. Yeah. It's fine.
I hated it, and I was in physical pain watching it.
Wow. Okay.
Also, the more that before I do that, I would love to hear your guys, because I do think fairness of it. I'd like to hear people who actually liked it.
I mean, I saw it when it first came out. I was after college, because I'm an elderly gay. And I remember at the time thinking, this is a movie that it's going to take me a while to really figure out what's going on with it. Like with a lot of Kubrick films, I think time, aids, in the understanding of it. And I have to say, just giving it 20 years and being 20 years older, I saw it through, I watched it again this morning. I'd watched it several times over the years, but I just think it's funny because it's co-written with Frederick Raphael, mm-hmm. who wrote one of my favorite movies about marriage ever, which is Two for the Road. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot that this movie gets right about the sort of, the Tom Cruise character is a shit, and he does not understand women. He doesn't understand himself. He doesn't understand sexuality in general. And so to see him be this guy who kind of treats his wife as this sort of possession, the way he touches her, the way he looks at her, and then to be so dense as far as understanding that she is appealing, not because she is any woman, but because she is this specific woman, I thought that was really interesting. And then I sent out this article that I love that Slate ran about, no, sorry, Slash Film, talking about what a great Christmas movie this is and how it's kind of structured like A Christmas Carol, because, you know, when Nicole Kidman tells her about this, you know, this guy that she had seen years ago and how she would have left everything behind to fuck him once, that's sort of the...
That's Tiny Tim.
Exactly. Well, that's the fuck of Christmas Past is what the movie, is what the article calls it. And then, you know, Christmas Present is him, like, going out into the world and having all these women throw themselves at him and going to the orgy and none of it going right. And then there's the Ghost of Fucks Yet to Come is where he goes out looking for it and can't find it, and it's all falling apart, and, you know, he realizes he's gotten in way too deep. So yeah, I think it's a really smart movie about how straight guys just don't get it.
Yeah, I just find it to be such a, like, really hilarious and, like, searing critique of a man who thinks he's, like, a man in society, has this very specific...
I'm a doctor.
...image of his identity. Yeah, he keeps flashing his doctor's license like it's a police badge. Yeah. And he sees himself as, like, this detective who's investigating something. He has no idea what he's going to do when he gets there. He has absolutely no idea what's going on in the inner lives of women, really other people at all. And I see it... I mean, my favorite Kubrick movie is probably Barry Lyndon, which I think touches on a lot of similar things of, like, look at this buffoon is kind of, like, the theme of the movie. So for me, I mean, I find it hysterical. I agree that he's an intolerable character. Yeah. I think Tom Cruise even said he hated playing that character. And there is a lot of walking, which is a lot of people's critiques, but I think that is part of, like, they're trying to make it feel like he's going into his inner life and experiencing something that's like a dream, which the movie hits that pretty hard on the nose towards the end. Yeah. But I think they say out loud, I've been in a dream, I'd like to be awake now.
Barry Lyndon, fun fact, the mask that he wears at the orgy is molded on Ryan O'Neill's face.
That checks
weird.
Out.
Yeah.
It's got a real Ryan O'Neill look to it.
There are a lot of Kubrick self-referential things in this movie.
I'm sure, because the whole thing is so masturbatory.
Whoa!
I agree with you. I think that, and I'm someone, I love a slow-paced film. I love 2001. I've seen, not to brag, I've seen Polaris numerous times.
Solaris.
Not to brag, I've never got the name right.
I've seen Polaris, the band that does Pete and Pete theme song live.
Oh, good.
And
yes.
They were okay.
I had their single from the Kellogg cereal.
Their single.
I broke down and got the album.
It's good.
No, I like an immersive slow pacing, but this one I honestly... At 15 minutes when we were still in the first scene and I was like, oh, you're not going to actually reveal any depth to these characters. Like, everything I was gleaning, I got in the first 30 seconds of a character interaction. And then I stayed with that character for another 15 minutes of banal nonsense. And I wanted to watch it like a podcast on, like, double time. And then the...
It is
most
a structurally insane movie.
The most exciting revelation for me was realizing... that in 1999, Nicole Kidman had never been stoned, clearly, in real life.
Oh, my God.
Girls, her pot performance, ooh. I was like, have you ever been around a person who's high?
She did kind of go to, like, beatnik energy. Like, hey, baby, Jesus. I gotta get out there.
Well, I thought her high is better than his high.
Yeah. They're both
Because you know
terrible.
The Scientologists are not down for that. I'm sorry.
The thing that really amused me outside of the stone scene is that Bill's idea of what his wife's fantasy is to get badly fingered by a sailor.
Stop it.
Because that's all, like,
in black
he's
and
kind
white.
Of kissing.
In
yeah,
tones.
Yeah. And she's just laying on the table, and he's like, yep, I'm gonna just do this. And that's kind of the one thing I took away where I was like, I don't think we get, like, sex scenes like this anymore. Like, this, I think the closest we've ever got to this post, anything, like, maybe Monsters Ball. But I was like, Tom Cruise is filling up Nicole Kidman, and Nicole Kidman is Nicole Kidman, which is why I was like, this is an interesting...
Tom Cruise is filling up Nicole Kidman.
Well, like, in that scene, like, her, like, you know, not to get graphic, but, like, her nipples are in between his finger, and I'm like, calm down, Tom. Yeah. Like, I'm sensing you're doing too much.
Oh, I like that it becomes explicitly clear that he's terrible in bed. He's awful. He's awful. His idea of her fantasy, like, that's the thing is, what he's envisioning is like, oh, that guy was probably better at sex than me. And he's envisioning terrible sex.
Yeah. I would like to know her version of what her fantasy of that would look like, as opposed to his clunky thing. I don't know.
The way he flirts, too, you're like, this guy's bad. He's not good at bed. He's terrible at bed.
I agree with you that yes, mechanically, the pot smoking part, they don't really get. But I think that Nicole Kidman's monologue, her soliloquy in that scene is actually really good, and she very good doing it.
I guess it's that I felt even her fundamental argument. I'm like, there's no way a woman who's as her character, as Alice, there is no way a woman who's gone through her life looking like Alice has not had someone say to her before, yeah, or has not had that thought to her before of, yeah, this guy's only talking to me because he wants to sleep with me. She's shocked when her husband suggests that to her. You think the only... do I think the only reason some creepy Hungarian man who talked to you for 30 seconds wants to bone you is because you're beautiful? Like, that she is like, what? You dare? Like, it's insane to me.
The only time I'm ever going to compare the oeuvre of Stanley Kubrick and Hallmark Christmas movies.
Okay? Oh!
But... I was flabbergasted watching this again this morning, how much Christmas decoration there is in every fucking room you walk into.
Every
time somebody walks into a door, bam! It's like there's a tree, there's garland, there's lights. It's like those fucking Hallmark movies.
Store.
Where you cannot not have it everywhere, in every nook and cranny. And so when people say, oh, what? Eyes Wide Shut is a Christmas movie? I'm like, have you seen it lately? It's screaming Christmas at you from every corner.
Oh, yeah.
You brought that up, and I was like, I don't remember it. And then literally, I'm like, that's on me, Alonzo. That is on, like, the amount. And I do
it's
like
oppressive.
The comparison because...
The oppressive spirit of Christmas.
It's oppressive, but it's oppressive in the same way like the Hallmark ones are, that you're like, we get it. Even though it's sunny outside, it's meant to be Christmas. They love those lights. And actually, the lights, like... Technically, I know what he's doing with things. There's framing devices in this. But to me, just the stiltedness, the idea that my memory of it was, oh, it's about this couple, obviously Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, and there's an orgy. That's all I remembered. And then when I went back, I was like, that was not an orgy. I mean, I'm not like saying I'm like a professor of kink, but... Whoa, if you think that's all rich white people are getting up to.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was what was interesting to me in the orgy scene. As, like, you know, a member of kink.com and, you know, firm visitor to the upper floor site. Like one, it was very weird. People who get what I'm talking about is going to be great. People who Google it are going to be disgusted.
Maybe don't Google
Open a private tab.
But like, there, yeah, I was noticing in the orgy scene. One thing I did notice, though, which I wonder if the masks helped them get in the way, is there were women getting oral sex, which always seems to be the MPAA's like smackdown. Yeah. Also, I might have got the extra horny version because I know there's like the Kubrick cut where it's like, and then they dialed it back.
I watched it on iTunes. I don't know which one they have. Yeah. But yeah, it is pretty easy now to see what they saw in Europe. There was originally to get an R rating, they had to sort of digitally insert more people in cloaks
a pretty good effect for 99.
All
of the rear
projection, panties
all
they put
really
on
good.
All the women in the circle. I was like, those women were not wearing underwear. The fact that I looked at that, and what I was mostly thinking, because again, it was a scene that took 20 minutes, there's all these naked women in a circle, and I was like, you know how many department heads had to sit around to talk about what their pubic hair would look like? All for them to cover them with CGI panties later.
But yeah, no, that scene, like, the one main thing I got is they're usually... two or four people having sex and then everyone watching. I was like, that, like,
still.
This is the worst. I would be the guy like causing a commotion and back, like, guys, this is the worst orgy I've
been
to.
Again, hilarious.
Like, you would be the hype man.
Yeah, come on. Like, we're just going to stand here. Like, what's also like, what's
the
fantasy? The fantasy of a very boring man who's terrible in bed. Of what an incredible orgy of all the rich people that he envies is like.
Yeah.
I would like to see an actually like a low-key comedic version of this starring like Zach Galifianakis.
I'm telling you, you've seen the high-key comedic version. That movie is meant to be funny. Like every Kubrick movie.
I love when he goes back to the house and they literally have a typed note ready for him. It's like, just stop.
Within like 2 minutes of him pulling up.
Yeah.
Steve Martin was one of the people that was up for that role.
Yes, I heard that.
Yeah, in like the 80s probably. Because this was a movie he tried to make in four different ways over like four decades.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And Jocelyn Pook, who did the score, was actually a member of one of my favorite 80s bands, the Communards.
But
she also did like these sort of experimental music stuff. And so, you know, that's she did all the ding, 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 ding. Yeah.
So good.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, real quick, I got to say, by the way, the first time I saw this movie was when it came out in theaters when I was 10. and I was like, I'm gonna see. I heard there's boobs in this. Yes. And boy, was I.
And you were not wrong. I will say, if I was just a young kid hoping to see some boobs, this movie would not disappoint.
I saw them
and
it shook me to
my
core.
Yeah, I mean, no, go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say I was glad that I didn't see it when young because I was already painfully horny. Like I did not need to be any hornier.
Nicole Kidman in glasses. I thought of you immediately.
Oh yeah,
the glasses were so hot. I will say too, the unreasonable standards that naked Nicole Kidman set for men and women everywhere of like expectation and anything.
We still feel the repercussions.
Right? Oh man, that's rippling through society now.
I remember when this came out in '99, like. Everybody thought, oh my God, we're going to see Tom and Nicole. Fuck.
Yeah.
They promoted this movie so much, and it was like, oh, it's going to be so sexy, and it's Kubrick, and so, you know, they were devoted to it, and they're married, so who knows? And so I think a lot of the initial wave of people not liking it, some people had, you know, maybe Drea's issues, but other people were just sort of like, it's not what I was expecting.
Yeah, no, he's
I could have left my raincoat at home.
It's like that Simpsons joke when the kids go to see Naked Lunch, and they come out, and they're like, there were two things wrong at that time.
Yeah. Oh man, I can talk about Nicole Kidman in glasses forever, but alas,
next time they'll put her in mom jeans.
Yeah, oof, and oh, it's don't. Over. So we got to give our review, and the way that we review things is we say, should you screen it, stream it, or skip it? The first option, completely not available. I mean, unless you have some cool theaters
around. You live
in a
major city. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
So, and for that, I'm gonna say yes, screen it. If not for I will say this is the one thing I kind of left out is like there were a lot of super cool shots in this. Mm. And one thing as someone who like went and saw Odyssey on a fresh print of 35mm at the Egyptian, anytime you can see one of his films like on the screen, it's worth seeing. You know, you can do whatever you want to enhance that. I usually do. You know. I'm going to go screen it.
You talking about steroids?
No, yeah. I take anabolic steroids before every Kubrick film.
Yeah.
Just sweating and veins.
Ripping the
seat
out.
So angry.
Screen it. Stream it however you can see it. Preferably screen it.
All right.
That was a question, right?
Yeah.
Great.
Yes.
Yeah.
That counts. I'm a huge skip it. I think this film is a garbage pile.
Wow. All the way to skip?
Wow.
I will never watch this again, and I would feel bad recommending it to someone.
Wow. Well,
also because I think he's made actual brilliant films, and I would hate to color a newbie's opinion of Kubrick.
Okay, maybe this isn't the first one you watch, but you should watch it, and you should screen it. Because, yeah, you should always, when you can, see his stuff on the big screen. And I think this is a movie that, you know, I think I was right when I said, when I saw it in 1999, I was like, this will mean more to me in 20 years, and it does.
Well, there you have it. Decide who you're going to listen to. The boys, woof, 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 or Drea.
That's right. Pay attention to that gender divide.
But it is time for us to go on a quick little break and let you hear these messages from other dope pods on the MaximumFun.org network.
Hey, Max Fun listeners. Have you been listening to Max Fun for a while and you've just been wondering, where's the new Flat Earth podcast I keep hearing about?
Well, here it is. We give you all the facts on NASA's lies and how we know that the Earth is actually flat.
Just kidding.
This is Ono, Ross, and Carrie, and we join fringe religious groups. We undergo alternative medical treatments.
And we hang out with people like 9/11 truthers, flat earthers. We find out, why do people believe strange things?
We join them, and we tell you all about it. We have a lot of fun. We make a lot of friends.
Yeah, we do. We joined the Mormons. We joined the Scientologists. We got acupunctured. We got fire cupped. We got ear candled. We've done it all, and we're going to keep doing it all. Why don't you check out Ono, Ross, and Carrie at MaximumFun.org?
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Avi Wadiway, and joining me in the studio today are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Ben Meckler.
Drea Clark.
And it's time for a call from the Who Shot Line. This is a fun one, and I can't wait to hear you all answer it. It's from Sarah in New York. Let's take a listen.
My husband and I are fascinated by the Bob Dylan biopic, I'm Not There, and we often discuss who we would want to play us if we were to get a biopic like I'm Not There, and what aspects of our personality each actor would be playing. So I'd love to know from you all, who would you want to portray you in your I'm Not There biopic, and what parts of you would they be portraying?
I like that question so much. Yeah. Sarah in New York.
Before anyone answers this question, I want to add in, after each of us answered who we'd cast to play ourselves, I want everyone to say who they would cast. Would Alonzo and I, for example, cast the same actress that Drea would play herself? Let's see if we get any matches. Ben, do you want to go first?
Lord, no. This question made me so anxious. I hate talking about myself. Thinking, you know, having to have a rich inner life stresses me out. Maybe then Laura Dern is my anxiety.
I love it so much.
Yeah. In Renata mode.
Oh, any mode, really. I'll take whatever I can get.
She's strung high.
Yeah. I do feel like probably a troop of Laura Derns could cover the bases. I guess I feel very connected to her. Laura, if you're out there, if you're listening, hit me up.
You have a Netflix show.
Hit me up for this.
I've got a Netflix show. An upcoming Netflix show. That's all I got right now. I'm going to have to think on it some more.
Okay, all right. Then let's go to Drea, because this is the most exciting.
You guys, I love an assignment. So, and I really like this. My family's had this long thing. My, extended family at Christmas time, Alonzo time, as we call it, that we, it's become a game where I cast my family, and they love it, and nobody knows who any actors are, so I literally have to have my computer there to, show up. I highly recommend it as a game. This, I like the tweak on it a lot. So for myself, of thinking of different avenues, I would cast Jack Black as my more sort of ebullient, obnoxious... Oh, yeah. You guys, I know you don't see much of the obnoxiousness for me because I'm a delicate flower, as we mentioned. But Jack Black, Queen Latifah, because I like to think that sort of there's a room commanding and a kind of, you know, performy, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Alice and Janney. I really like to think that might be more aspirational, but I like to think of the kind of... take names and kick ass sort of Alice and Janney element. So that's who I was looking for. I was concentrating on positive elements of my personality.
It's the way to go for self-preservation.
Yeah, I'm just squashing the other ones. Yeah, they don't get to get cast. But I'm also excited because I have ideas for you guys.
Ooh.
So Iffy, Joe Pesci.
Oh, okay.
Listen, I like a fast-talking horn dog for you, and Pesci gives me that. I feel like he takes that
horniest facet.
Yeah. Right? Alonzo, Christine Baranski.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
I'll take it.
Right? She always has a good answer. She can arch a brow. I feel like she would be good at an aside like you are. Mm. Anyway, I get that. And Ben, new best friend, Michael Cera, which is actually similar to the sort of neurotic element that you were alluding to. But I see that, and I can see, do you remember in Arrested Development when he would do the Snoopy walk?
Yes.
I
Snoopy walked in here.
I can see that for you.
But you're also giving, I know this isn't all about who do you look like, but
I meant more of a personality.
No, I understand.
Yeah. I don't like talking about myself. I love other people talking about me, so just keep it coming.
Great. Having just met Ben, my first thought was Josh Groban.
Ooh. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. He does
who
have a Groban.
I got no use from as a musician, but I think he's hilarious as an actor.
Well, like Groban, I did once perform in a high school production of Chess, the musical. So I think
One
we are connected
in, Bangkok,
in that way.
In the World's Your Oyster?
I didn't get to sing that song, unfortunately. Oh. But it is a great song from the musical
it's
Chess.
It's so good.
I know it so well.
Okay, who else has their personal casting list they're ready to reveal?
I was thinking for me, kind of a split between, the obvious is sort of like Seth Rogen, but also Janine Garofalo.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Especially Janine Garofalo, if you saw her in A Bread Factory.
I did.
Where she gives the tersest, most annoyed Q&A after a movie ever. I was like, okay, yes.
And she's annoyed by children repeatedly?
I felt very seen. For Drea, I was thinking Liev Schreiber for your film producing, festival programming kind of get shit done mode. And then also with some Elaine Stritch.
Oh my God, I'm honored.
Yeah, just as the sort of enthusiastic but also withering at the same time.
The idea that I have a personality that brought to mind Liev Schreiber and Elaine Stritch is like
the two
telling
genders.
Me I'm doing something okay. Yeah, like
it's all
those
working.
Are the two genders. That's
for Iffy, I was kind of going, I was thinking like Terry Crews in
Ooh.
Terms of like
oh, yeah.
funny, but also, you know, like with the intimidating, you know,
hey, lights up a room
architecture yes. and the charm and everything, but also, Ponyo, the
gold or the fish,
the animated fish character who yells about ham a lot.
Yeah,
I kind of get that energy too.
Yes, I definitely need a biopic of Iffy where one of his personalities is played by the animated fish Ponyo.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
that's pretty close. I definitely had Terry Crews on my list for that energy, but definitely Tiffany Haddish for my horny energy. Mm-hmm. Like, I think
yeah.
we share the thirst action.
Yes.
But I think, like, the inner monologue when I'm truly aloof and just kind of lost, which you don't get to see because I have a list in front of me that keeps me from droning off, Lakeith Stanfield.
Yeah,
good old like the okay. if he's inner monologue when I'm like thinking inside while Terry Crews actually says what comes out. So for Drea, I was thinking what would be fun is Kristen Bell, because just like because
oh,
she
yeah,
also has the ability to be like very like warm and nice and you know fun, but also there's like.
Got some
bitch. Yeah, exactly. I'm curious to see what you think about mine,
oh,
Alonzo.
Boy.
But Javier Bardem, because you know you get that daddy and zaddy energy. From
oh
me.
Yeah,
because you're like, I want this man to tuck me in or fuck me in. Am I right?
Shit.
As long as it's not Anton Sugar, Javier Bardem.
Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
acceptable.
What about Javier Bardem and Bond?
I will also take Hamon, and sure, yes. Bond,
what about Mother Javier Bardem?
It's slowly fading away, beautiful Javier Bardem.
I have a heater to sell you.
Yeah.
If you have any questions for the Who Shot line, don't be shy. You can just call us at WSY-803-1664.
Be like Sarah. Keep it brief.
But it's time for the staff picks. And every week we ask the panel to tell us about a movie that we think folks should check out. Any movie at all. So let's, you want to pick
start.
Who start?
Mine is in the theaters right now. It's a little motion picture called Crawl.
Damn it!
Wait, no, we discussed this!
Yeah, because I thought for sure that was not going to be your staff pick.
Oh my God, I came in today and was like, it's for the first time in a while that I thought Alonso and I might have the same one. And he was like, no, pshaw. And I'm like, phew, okay, I'm going to say it because I had a backup.
Go ahead. I'll have it back up by the time it's my turn.
This one, anyway, Crawl was such an unexpected good time. Mm. It follows a girl in Florida who, there's a hurricane going on, and against all advice, she goes back to find her dad. And, you know, the water's rising, all of this happening. And you guys, some big-ass gators. Who knew? And so it's got all these action pieces that work, and it has a lot of interpersonal relationship stuff that works. And the woman who plays the lead, Kaya Scolaria,
mm-hmm.
Scolaria.
Also in Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Funny.
Yeah.
I know her
All
from
roads lead to.
Yeah, I know her from Skins. She played Nicholas Holt's younger sister in that, mm-hmm. who's kind of catatonic and a horrible actress. So it was really wonderful seeing what I thought was a great, interesting, nuanced performance in this very unexpected. And I don't blindly like all of Alexander Aja's films, so Aja's films, but I really enjoyed Crawl.
All right, Ben?
My movie's not currently in theaters, but because I enjoyed so much watching a sort of takedown of a man who thinks that he is a certain type of person who has a very toxically masculine idea of the world, in Eyes Wide Shut, it made me think of one of my all-time favorite movies, Lena Wertmüller's Seven Beauties. Which is one of the best movies ever made. First time a woman was ever nominated for Best Director at the Oscars, which like never comes up when people talk about that record. But also, it's just a phenomenal takedown of like a very toxically masculine Italian guy who thinks he's like a real man's man, and then World War II happens, and he winds up in a concentration camp. And it is the darkest, bleakest of dark comedies. I wouldn't even say that it's through and through a dark comedy, but it is a very funny movie and a cruel movie to his character, but also. Not afraid to tell a very emotional and thought-provoking story with a great Giancarlo Giannini performance, of course. See this movie, please. I barely ever meet anyone who has seen it. I always recommend it to people. It's a phenomenal movie.
I'm ecstatic that the week Seven Beauties came up, I said Crawl.
Yeah.
That lives forever.
I just want to say, I always point out that Linda Burt-Mueller was first woman to be nominated for Best Director. But,
hell yeah.
But I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, so Outfest is starting this weekend. It's going to be running through the end of next week. Mm-hmm. And every year we show amazing movies, and sometimes they wind up in theaters, and sometimes they wind up streaming, and sometimes you got to really track them down. One of the best docs we've had in recent years is now on Netflix. It's a film called Jules Catch One. And if you live in Los Angeles, the Catch One was a vitally important queer disco that was mainly catering to the black community, and as such became a very central location for political activism, for distributing AIDS information, and for helping out people who were dealing with HIV and AIDS during the 80s and 90s. And Jewel herself is this fascinating figure who just like overcame all the bullshit to like keep this club alive for a long, long time and make things happen. And like, you know, important disco acts broke there, and it was a central force for the queer community. And this movie, I think, does a great job of really just celebrating what a special space it was, and how so often it is those places that people think, oh, it's just a nightclub or whatever, that wind up, you know, really being the heart of what makes a community and what allows a community to thrive. And so, like, there's another doc like that this year called Circus of Books. That's the Outfest opening night film, and it's going to be on Netflix toward the end of the year. But in the meantime, totally get caught up with Jules Catch One. It also gave me an opportunity to do a Q&A where I got to talk to not only Jewel, but Evelyn Champagne King and other diva disco luminaries, which it was amazing.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, yeah, like I said, back to back to, I mean, Crawl is doing well. So I get three.
I stand by Crawl.
Yeah.
Crawl was going to be my choice.
Yeah,
film.
So I'm going to go ahead and stink this one up, because sometimes I think you need to really watch a movie that's not so great to appreciate the great movies, and also just have a good, this one, watch for fun. But I just recently rewatched it for another movie podcast. I watched Catwoman.
Oh, good Lord.
And I
the only film
it.
By Pitoff, as far as I know.
Yes. Oh, I went so deep into Pitoff. That's why this movie is so interesting to me. This guy, Pitoff, and his, like, one and done, the, like, this is Halle Berry coming off an Academy Award, and this is, like, when you know even more about, when you know that this movie was essentially first written after, like, your Batman, what was the second?
Batman Returns.
So this was really trying to be Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman, and then it just got discombobulated by being in development hell for so long, and then this is what was spit out. The basketball scene is probably one of the worst sequences of film I've seen in my life. The idea of when she has her power and like walking around her house that she keeps waking up on high shelves because she's like a cat.
Pretty funny bit.
The choice to not even explain why these cats are powerful and just get
Don't they like briefly go like it's ancient Egyptian magic and just like move on?
Yeah, pretty much.
Cats, Egypt, magic, fuck off. Just Catwoman.
Yeah. But honestly, like, I went to watch it to kind of be like critical, but I actually had fun at how bad it was, and I think you know, you can appreciate those instead of giving Neil Breen all your money. And next week we'll be talking about The Farewell. I can't wait to cry my eyes out. I know it's going to be a good cry movie. And if you like what you're hearing, leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts, y'all. 5-star reviews get a shout out on the show. And this week, we'd like to thank the Geeky Librarian. Thank y'all so much for providing a podcast that is fun and inclusive. Shout out to Ricky for starting this great podcast. It had filled the hole left out by the old Wham Bam Pow, and I'm delighted with Iffy's addition. Thank you. Alonzo, Dre, and April are such a great solid group who balance humor and thoughtfulness, and the guests they bring in are always great. They haven't heard this episode left. just knocking
I'm a big
down
old piece
my friend.
Shit.
We miss you, Ingu. Like the best podcast, I feel like I'm listening to my friends. Well, you are our friend, Geeky Librarian.
Thank you so much for
and
that.
And I will return that book, I promise.
Mika Arjanjo writes, hey guys, I'm Mika from Brazil. I really enjoy the podcast and I have a great time listening to it. I love Is This Important? Do You Care? As a non-English native, I can understand almost everything you say because everybody speaks clearly and it helps me to improve my English. Sorry about my English. You hush, Mika. Your English is great. Keep doing the great work. Yeah. Thank you so much. That's
Thank you.
Kind.
Your English is definitely better than my Portuguese.
No, tons. And we will we'll keep that enunciating happening.
Oh, man. Well, thanks to everyone for coming in, especially Ben sitting down there, all his thoughts. Where can people find you?
You can find me on the internet, on all social media platforms at Ben Meckler, M-E-K-L-E-R, or an upcoming Netflix show.
Any
still
of them.
Funny. Any
of
still them. Funny.
Have a comment or suggestion about this week's show? Then tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod or send an email to WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. If you have a question for the Who Shot line, that number is WSY 803-1664. Please keep your questions to under a minute. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this has been a production of MaximumFun.org. Bye bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.